importance of fixing the bridges. We had a little bit of heartburn about the amount of money that was put into 2367 for cities and counties until we listened to the testimony this morning and feel that it is justified considering the efforts to reach the 50-50 compromise. Bob and I spent a lot of time reviewing this, and we thought it would be appropriate that we read the amendments, because most of the people in this audience haven't heard those amendments yet, and we do it as part of our testimony. Would that be... Representative Greenlee, we're planning to sing it for you.
Take a four-page bill and turn it into a 44-page amendment.
We do have a recommendation. It might make it easier to pass if you accept our recommendation. The recommendation is that you amend House Bill 2367 into House Bill 4021 and move forward with a single document. And there was a time when we would not have felt this way. It was a time when we had serious consideration or concerns about the second bill. But we think that it would be to the advantage of every legislator to only have to deal with one bill on this issue. We also feel that it's extremely important that the items in these two bills move forward with as fast as legitimately possible. So with that, I want to pass the baton over to my partner. I didn't think I'd ever say that. Bob?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Bob Russell. I'm president of the Oregon Trucking Associations, and I would like to express my support for House Bill 2041 and also express my support for merging House Bill 2367 into House Bill 2041. I want to thank Representative Brown, Senator Metzger, and of course Senator Starr for all their hard work, Representative Mabry, Representative Beyer, who's not here this afternoon. I want to thank her as well. I'd like to thank Pat Egan from the Governor's Office for sticking with us. It's been up and down the last 5 months, but I think we've come out with a good work product, and all the effort was worth it. And I would also like to thank my partner, Larry Campbell. It has been a real pleasure working with him this session. And with that,
neutral.
Thank you.
Thank you, gentlemen. And I think that you bring a new meaning to bipartisanship. And I want to thank you for all the hard work you've also put into it, because you haven't necessarily stood on the sidelines.
Oh, that's an understatement.
If I could, I'd like to bring the remainder of the truck lobby up.
We are trying, and I'm going to pass in. What did MacArthur say? Fade away.
Thank you, Larry. Thank you.
In thanking everyone, I was remiss and I neglected one person. I would certainly like to thank Bruce Warner. It's because of his leadership that the trucking industry is here unanimously in support of this effort, and we have a great deal of confidence that Bruce will be able to deliver the expectations that these two bills represent. With that, I'd like to...
For the record, D. Bridges, Oregon Forest Products Transportation Association. I would echo everything that's been said up here. I would add, however, to that we're kind of a reluctant bridesmaid here, but we're generally in support of the bill. We got to get the bridges fixed. The bridges are our lifeblood. You can't function without it. I just want, it was a long, torturous process to get here. It took a long time to convince people that some of the ideas that were being thrown around were just simply more than we could afford. I've got an industry that is in the tank. Many of them are barely hanging on. I would not be surprised that this represents, I think, a 12.8% increase if you take into account registration and weight mile, and that 12.8% increase on top of the bill that they're now paying is probably more than some of them are going to be able to stand. Having said that, there are the rest of the industry has to have the bridge. So we are in a position where we have no choice. We have to cinch up our belts and do the best we can to survive with this new higher rate in order to get those bridges fixed, because without them, we're out of business. And part of this, I think, is a commitment on the part of other folks, particularly ODOT, to also cinch their belts up and do everything that they can to help in the process. And I heard quite a bit of that this morning, and I think I liked what I heard. They were, I think, supportive of the idea of doing that. And Representative Zahner asked a question about reduction of staff, and we are fully in support of a reduction of staff. I know that's not part of this bill, but having said that, though, we're also supportive of adding back however many people it takes to actually do the job. These bridges have got to get, got to be built. There's a bunch of other stuff in there that I'm not particularly excited about, but my main goal is to get the bridges fixed, and if in order to get the bridges fixed, we also have to buy off on some other stuff that I'm less interested in, I'm willing to do that. So I don't mean to cast a wet blanket over this thing. I am in firm support of the bill, and I will do everything I can to get it passed.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, for the record, Al Elkins, Oregon Tow Truck Association. We, too, are in support of the bill. I wanted to thank Pat Egan and the governor himself for earlier this session spending a morning with us, the trucking industry representatives, in an office talking about the need for this this package. And I think Pat helped move the process along after that meeting. I'd also like to thank you, Representative Brown, for all the time you spent with us the last few months, and Representative Buyer, who for the second time this session has taught me how to sit at the table and eat my broccoli, and I greatly appreciate her support and her guidance this this session. That concludes all I have to say.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Representative,
as usual. Bob, can you talk to me about Section 22 of 2041? Senator Metzger did set the pollution tax credit. Senator Metzger did a good job of raising it. I wonder if you can talk a little bit more. How important is that to you?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Greenlick, I agree with you that Senator Metzger did a very good job in describing all the thought that went into that particular section. As you well know, fixing the bridges is the number one priority out of this effort, but secondarily was to is to stimulate the economy. In part, that's the reason that the three of us are here in support of the total package, not just the bridge fix. And the Pollution Control Investment Tax Credit is also designed as an economic stimulus measure, as Senator Metzger discussed earlier this morning. You may be aware that we have a fairly sizable truck manufacturer that resides in Oregon. This is something that's viewed as very positive from their standpoint. It's also viewed as being very positive from the standpoint of the people that's the other people in the state that sell trucks and sell engines. So one of the things that we sort of took our lesson from was the state of Oklahoma, who a number of years ago came to the conclusion that if they became a truck-friendly state, it would really stimulate their economy. And Oklahoma is 2 days by truck to every place on the East Coast. And what they tried to do was to attract transportation, to attract the warehousing and the distribution to Oklahoma, and they were just amazed at how much that stimulated their economy. We recognize that this is a fairly modest proposal, but we believe that it will have a lot of those kinds of impacts. It is the first of its kind in this country, which we think is very positive to put Oregon out front, and we think that it will help boost our economy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, John.
Thank you. Representative Ryer.
I apologize for being late, and hopefully I didn't miss an answer to my question. Thank you. It has been pointed out to me that this might be some way to get outside of the cost responsibility piece. And I kind of like your opinions of this. I'm trying to figure out if that is actually accurate or not. So if you have anything you can say on that.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Brown, or Byer, excuse me, you missed our earlier conversation when I thanked you for your participation in this process, and I would like to again reiterate that. No, I do not believe that is the case. If we were, in fact, departing from cost responsibility, my partner, who's now sitting or has left the room, would be objecting very stringently. One of his principles as we've negotiated this whole package is that we maintain cost responsibility in accordance with the constitutional provision, and we were totally in agreement with that. So no, I do not believe that it in any way violates the principles of cost responsibility in the state constitution.
Thank you. I appreciate you saying that and putting that on the record. I wanted to alleviate any concerns about it.
Honor.
Mr. Chair, on these new engines for the trucks now, will they be able to turn the trucks off, or will they have to let them idle all the time like they're doing now? What's that?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Zahner, thank you for that question.
I hope you mean that, Bob.
The new engines, basically the difference between the new engines and the old engines is they emit a lot less nitrogen oxide. So it's really pollution control equipment that's on the new engines that makes the difference. In terms of idling, there's some other ways to sort of skin that cat. We have been talking with Representative March and with the Department of Environmental Quality about some initiatives that we intend to get behind and support during the interim to see if we can't help to address that issue. I think I've testified before this committee before that sort of the natural control for us on engine idling is the cost of diesel. And diesel, as you are well aware, has hit a historical high this winter. It's just been astronomical. And all of our companies have idling control programs in place. Having said that, the truck is often the home of the driver. And if it's freezing outside and they are stuck at a rest stop, the only way they can keep warm is to let the truck idle. So we sort of are trying to balance the environmental issues with the economics in terms of the cost of diesel, and at the same time treat our drivers like we treat ourselves and we heat and cool our homes.
Any other questions? Thank you again, gentlemen, for testifying, and I really appreciate the help you've provided us in developing this package. Could I have Dick Yates, please, and we'll ask Dick to give us a rundown on the revenue statement.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Dick Yates with Legislative Revenue. You should have, or perhaps it's being passed out right now, as a revenue impact statement. And if you're looking at the one for House Bill 2041, the -6 amendments, you have, first of all, just a description of what the measure does, which hopefully is the same thing Janet has in her staff measure summary. And on the second page, you have the revenue impacts that are associated with the bill. The first part, there's really three things that I look at separately in terms of the revenue impact. One is the net proceeds of bonds that are going to be issued, and they're with the expenditures that are essentially going to be made on the highway system. And this is very much in flux at this point. I can't really identify exactly how much the Department of Transportation is going to be able to spend on which projects they're going to do this year, next year, and the year after. And as those projects become eligible and as they can get the contracts out on those, they will be issuing bonds. So what I've tried to do is simply put a schedule together which relies on ODOT's estimate of what they're going to issue in the first couple of years, and then apportions out the rest of the $1.9 billion in bonding over the 10-year period. In other words, the bill says that the authorization to issue these bonds disappears in 2010, January 2nd of 2010. So I'm assuming they will issue all of these bonds by that time. And this is sort of what it would look like if you make those assumptions. You've got, in the first biennium, the upcoming 03-05 biennium, you got about $292 million, which would presumably be spent on the roads from net proceeds of bonds. And then for the outline bienniums, 05, 07, 07, 09, you've got about $643 million. And so that's kind of the picture in general of what we're looking at, I think, for the issuance of bonds and the expenditures on the roads. The second section then has to deal with the income tax capture. And that's really driven by what actually happens in terms of what's spent on the roads and what bonds are issued, because that's what's going to generate the income tax revenue. The way the income tax capture works is you've asked the Department of Administrative Services, in connection essentially with our office, Legislative Revenue, and with the department, to estimate after the fact what sort of taxes are generated by these expenditures. So you have ODOT spending money. Part of that money is spent on contracts with private contractors, and those private contractors are paying out wages. Those wages result in personal income taxes, and that's what I've tried to look at, what sort of personal income taxes are going to be generated by these expenditures. Now note that this is an after-the-fact sort of look at things. We're not asking what effect these expenditures have on the Oregon economy and how much income they're going to generate. All we're saying is, okay, if this happens, we're going to be able to look at the actual tax expenditures or at tax revenues and say where they came from. Now, with baseball players, it's a little easier because you're dealing with like 1,000 people or something. You can track them. All right, with this, you're going to have to make an estimate because you've got an awful lot of people involved. In terms of all the people working for private contractors who have a contract with ODOT. So it's just a matter of making that estimate, what sort of the dollars that are spent on the roads, how much of that flows into private contracts, how much of that flows into wage payments, and then how much tax results as a result of those wage payments. So it starts off a little slow, as you can see here, in the first year, and that's because of the amount of bonding and the amount of activity that you can generate immediately is small relative to the total package. What you have in the bill is 20% of that revenue, whatever's estimated, going to senior and disabled transit. Another 20% capped at $1 million per year, going to, I guess, what I would call the capacity utilization or efficiency of capacity utilization. And I'm not sure what that means, but I'm sure Bruce Warner does. But that's the amount that would be available for those purposes. And then going to the truck engine tax credit is 60% of those revenues, up to a maximum of $3 million per year, or $6 million per biennium. And so you've got two 20s and a 60, that's all of the money. But with two of those being capped, one at $1 million per year and the other at $3 million per year, you're likely to have some additional money left over. And if you do, that reverts back to the general fund. So what you have here in the first biennium is nothing reverting back, all being used, essentially. And then in the second biennium, you've got 9.8 out of 22 million, which I'm estimating would be identified as taxes resulting from contracts, highway contracts, which will flow back into the general fund. The last section then has to do with the increases in taxes and fees in the bill. You see, because the increase in travel trailers, campers, and revenues that are dedicated to parks and recreation, an increase there in the budget for parks and recreation. Then if you look at the highway fund, I've done this in two ways, the distribution and also the division between light and heavy vehicles. In the first section there, if you look at the full biennium, again, for the 03-05 biennium, the effective date of this act is January 1, so you do not get a full biennium. That's why those numbers are so much smaller. In the 05-07 biennium, you have a full impact of these. You're raising about $139 million from light vehicles and about $58.8 million from heavy vehicles. Now, that doesn't quite look or match up with the highway cost responsibility of 33%. And the reason for that is that the heavy vehicles are currently overpaying. And so the rates have to be adjusted to reflect that current overpayment. And what I've done, I did put together the schedules for the increased registration fees and the increased weight mile taxes on heavy vehicles. We did that first. We had a number for what heavy vehicles were paying, and we matched essentially the taxes on light vehicles to come up with an amount which matched the current highway cost allocation heavy vehicle share of 33.3%. We look at the division then of those revenues. You see again in the full biennium, $113.8 million going to the state, $50 million to the county, and $34 million to the cities.
Questions? Any questions on it?
Yes, sir.
Representative Greenland.
Section 20 in Bill 2041 in that retention of income tax says the amount of state personal income tax revenues that result directly or indirectly from private sources. What does indirectly mean in that case, and how have you estimated that?
Basically, sort of regional economic theory, you're using basically multipliers so that if you have expenditures being made directly on highway projects, and these are using equipment, say, or other factors of production, and they're increasing the demand for those factors of production, then there is some increase in those activities as a result of that, and that results also in additional wages. So you're trying to estimate the combined impact of just the wages that are directly paid out by the contractors and those increased wages that result from related activities that are supplying goods, basically services to the actual contractor.
May I follow up, sir?
Go on.
What multiplier do you use? Is that multiplier the same throughout the state, and is there an empirical basis for that?
Well, I suspect it is not the same throughout the state, and I have, there is an empirical basis for it, yes. Although there's enough data, enough studies out there to justify a wide range of numbers for that. I've used a fairly small multiplier of actually 0.23, which is saying that for each job that's created directly, you get an additional 0.23, or one quarter of the job.
Thank you. That seems like a rational number.
Dick, how many the difference in the cost allocation, does that catch up in one biennium to the next? The next study is.
Yes, you've required the cost responsibility studies,
yeah.
Highway cost allocation studies, be done every 2 years. So there will be another one available, hopefully, in January of 2003 for the 2003-05 legislature.
Okay. Thank you. Is there any other question? Representative Byer?
Looking at these numbers, so the 2041 is the estimated revenue at 197 is your numbers, right? So
correct.
That's not quite $100 million a year, so we're
yes,
we're under that. And does this grow? I mean, remain pretty steady.
It grows slowly. The difficult part is it grows differently for light vehicles and heavy vehicles, so it keeps getting out of balance. If I were to go out here, and that's why I don't have an 05 or 07, 09 is difficulty of estimating the growth that's involved there. And that's the only data I would have to adjust it, is just growth. So it didn't seem logical to do that.
Thank you.
Any other questions on this one? I guess we can go to the next one.
Okay. House Bill 2367, then. Again, this is mostly just fees, mostly relating to driver's licenses and related tests, permits, and so on. And what you have is essentially for, again, a full biennium, you're raising about $15.6 million. And all of that goes to cities and counties. 60% of it goes to the counties, and 40% to the cities. I can add to that, if you like, a split again between heavy and light. What I have in the data, the detailed data, is about $10.6 million coming from light vehicles and about $5 million from heavy vehicles. So that's very close. That's about a 32% heavy and about a 68% light. So it's very close to the 33-66 highway cost allocation split.
Any questions? I don't see any, Dick. Thank you very much for your testimony, and I want to personally thank you for your patience and hard work in putting this together. I don't how many times we were down there asking you to make changes and adjustments, but it needs probably, without doubt, gets a little frustrating sometimes. Thank you again.
One more.
Appreciate it. Could I have Representative Vic Backlund and County Commissioner Leslie Lewis, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee. I am, for the record, Representative Vic Backlund from House District 25, which includes Kaiser, St. Paul, and I hope you pay especially good attention to this one, Newburgh. I am here today to speak definitely in behalf of House Bill 2041, the six amendments, and I'd like to give you very briefly, hopefully briefly, a little history in terms of my own personal history. With redistricting, Newburgh was added to our House District 25, and I learned very quickly, especially from Commissioner Lewis to my left, that this transportation issue for Newburgh was very, very, very important. And I'm talking specifically about the Newburgh-Dundee bypass. And so meeting after meeting, I attended the Mid-Willamette Valley Commission on the Area of Transportation and been involved in many meetings at in Newburgh, whether it's a summit or the post. And so I become very committed to the transportation in general. And that's been since August, I think, of 2001, and certainly specifically to the Newburgh-Dundee bypass. And so I've made it kind of a project to keep my my antenna out in terms of the transportation areas in general. And specifically, that's meant I've had conversations with Representative Brown and Senator Bruce Starr and ODOT Director Bruce Warner, the governor's person on transportation, Pat Egan. We even had a meeting with the governor. And so I'm delighted that it's my understanding that this bill will do what I'm hoping can be done and should have been done a long time ago. The Newburgh-Dundee bypass is a project of statewide significance, and we're very anxious that it be considered that and be always at the highest priority level when it comes time to consider transportation projects. So kind of, I think that should sum up what I would have to say. I'd be happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Thank you, Representative. Any questions? Don't see any. Commissioner.
Thank you.
Thank you for coming.
Yes, thank you very much. Chairman Brown and members of the committee, I'm Leslie Lewis. I'm one of the three Yamhill County commissioners, and I am we divide up our duties on liaison assignments, and I am the county commissioner who serves on the project oversight steering team for the Newburgh-Dundee Transportation Improvement Project. I also serve on MWAC. As Representative Backlund has already discussed, this project has long been one of the priorities for the Mid-Willamette Valley Area Commission on Transportation. Representative Zahner, we lost him in redistricting, but he used to represent Dundee and used to live in our area, used to be in my Rotary Club, so he's very familiar with this project, as is the chair, Alan Brown. So we very much appreciate House Bill 2041 and the amendments that would provide much-needed modernization dollars to projects of statewide significance. And the Newburgh-Dundee Bypass was named by the Oregon Transportation Commission last year as one of those projects of statewide significance. This is a critical project for Yamhill County, in fact, for the whole northwest region of Oregon. The Highway 99, Highway 18 corridor is the route that people from the Portland metropolitan area take to get from that area to get to the number one tourist attraction in the state of Oregon, which is the Spirit Mountain Casino in Grand Ronde. And of course, the other end of that road is the beautiful Central Oregon coast that, again, people from the Portland metropolitan area like to go to the coast and recreate there. But it's also the lifeline for Lincoln County and Yamhill County for us to be able to get our goods to market, to get our goods out to the I-5 freeway corridor, and also it's how we move people from our businesses that need to get up to the Portland airport and need to do business up in the Portland metropolitan area. So it is vital to our economy that this Newburgh-Dundee bypass project move ahead. We currently have 40,000 vehicles a day in Newburgh. 70% of those vehicles are passing through. The poor little town of Dundee, a two-lane highway, has 32,000 vehicles a day. That's as much traffic as I-5 carries between Albany and Eugene, going on a two-lane highway through Dundee. 92% of those vehicles in Dundee are through traffic. We really need the bypass to get traffic around those areas. I keep calling it a bypass. It is actually a multimodal project that will include transit, telecommuting, van pools, and carpools. We're looking for every avenue to reduce traffic in the Newburgh-Dundee corridor. And I just commend you for House Bill 2041. I believe that this will help provide the needed funding for our project as well as other projects in the state that are have languished for many years because of lack of modernization funds. And so I would thank you for that and urge your I vote on, I believe it's the Dash 6 amendments, although, now, are these the amendments that actually combine the two bills?
Mm-hmm. No, that'll be Dash 7.
Okay, well, then as a county, as a, wearing my county commissioner hat, I would have to encourage you on the Dash 7 amendments, which would combine the two bills, because obviously dollars for the county roads and the city roads are also much needed. So thank you very much, and I would answer any questions you have.
Thank you, Commissioner. Any questions?
Mr. Chair, not a question, but I would have to add my 2 cents worth, too, to also say I support the Dash 7s, which we have yet to see. I've yet to see myself, but nonetheless, on for the record.
I'll admit that's been somewhat of a moving target the last 3 or 4 months, but maybe we're getting towards the end of this. And I want to say that I've been down at Fort Hill on Highway 18 in my district when I think every single one of those cars that was trying to get through Dundee was passing that intersection, so I couldn't get out on the road. And it is important. It's very important to my district and the coastal area that those improvements there in Dundee happen, because it makes a difference on how easy people can get down there to the coast and spend some of those tourist dollars. It's important to us.
Yes, well, thank you, Representative. I'm sure that your businesses on the coast feel it. We've had business people in McMinnville tell us that we have McMinnville Industrial Promotions that's trying to bring business into McMinnville, the small and medium-sized manufacturing plants, and we are being overlooked. Yamhill County is being overlooked because of the difficulty of getting the goods to market and getting them out to I-5 corridor, and it must be doubly difficult for Lincoln County to attract those kinds of industries. So I think it's vital to the whole northwestern part of Oregon that we get this facility completed.
Thank you. Thank you again for your testimony. I appreciate it. Could I have John Ledger, please?
Well, Mr. Chairman, while
certainly,
John is coming up,
certainly,
could I ask you a question?
Certainly.
If the bills were moved together under the Dash 7 amendments, is there a tax on gasoline?
No.
In any of those amendments?
No.
All right.
Yeah, it's been there all.
Good afternoon, John.
Afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm John Ledger with Associated Oregon Industries. I'll be very quick because I know there are a lot of people here and you've already heard quite a bit of testimony. AOI is very pleased with this measure and we strongly support it. AOI's had a history of supporting transportation improvements. You may recall about two sessions ago we helped push through a referral to raise gas taxes, which hit the streets about the same time OPEC decided to bump up the price, and I think it got something like 12% vote or something, which I figure is like background error or inebriation rate or something. But I think people have become aware that something has to be done since that time, and so we're pleased people have been able to come together and work on this. You've already heard this is going to produce jobs. We think this is a good way to do it. They're good jobs. The business community is interested in it for the obvious reasons you've heard, like shipping, avoiding rerouting, reducing their costs. A couple of other quick things, though. When you talk with companies that may not be manufacturers, but they have a lot of employees, and this is not a minor thing, one of the things they bring up about transportation sounds minor, but I think it has to do with productivity, is their employees come to work cranky because the traffic is so bad and the flow of traffic is so bad that, you know, it's just another irritant that I think takes away from productivity. I think that making the changes that will occur that this bill has in it, one of the things we'll do will improve safety as roads and bridges are upgraded. I think we'll probably see a reduction in accidents and fatalities, and that's good for everybody. Somebody mentioned earlier on that there might be some environmental issues involved. Well, I think this will be an environmental plus. One of the things, I think it was Spokane, actually did to bring themselves into attainment with air quality standards was they built a connector, a freeway connector from the interstate to the core of the city, because traffic when it is flowing produces much less pollution than traffic when it's sitting idling. When you retrofit the bridges, they will become more fish friendly. I think this has benefits for everybody. Lastly, we would urge that you move quickly, because I think one of the things that this measure can do is show the public that the legislature is doing something that is strong, good economic, concrete things that get done. And I think right now the public's looking for that, and this is your chance to provide it. So with that, we'd ask you to move ahead on this. We strongly support it. We'll strongly support it to our members. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, John. Any questions? I don't see any. Thank you again for your testimony. Let's see. Then I have Tom Gallagher, and I get a couple of time. Ken Armstrong, is Ken still here? Let's see. We'll go ahead with you, Tom. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Tom Gallagher, representing Snitz Industries. We'd like to support this bill, too, especially Sections 10 and Sections 32 on freight mobility. Tom Zelenka of Snitzer Industries is the chair of the Freight Mobility Committee, and putting $100 million into the freight mobility projects and defining freight mobility inside of this bill, I think, is a big step forward. Secondly, I'd like to support this bill because of Senate Bill 467, the Industrial Lands Bill, which is sitting down in Ways and Means right now. And again, part of that $100 million will go toward transportation access for those large industrial sites that we hope to put online. There's only one, it's not a negative, there's only one thing I'd like to add here, and that is I hope that the committee gets on the record here in the work session and then later on the debate on the floor that this money is new money for local governments and the Department of Transportation, but mostly for local governments, and that the new monies that come in will not cause any fungible monies to be backed out of the other side, that all of the money will be new money, will go into projects, will go into road development, and that we won't have any, we'll have 100% bang from this bill, not a loss of monies on the backside. I noticed on Section 36, starts to talk about some sort of maintenance of effort, and I don't expect you to go any further, but it would be nice when we have some debates in local government record at local government level to have a good record here which says that all of this is new money.
Thank you, Tom.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Don't see any. Thank you for your testimony. Rich Angstrom. Please. Thank you, Rich.
Good afternoon. My name is Rich Angstrom. I'm the president of the Oregon Concrete Aggregate Producers Association. I'm also here to testify in support of the bill. I have one, I think, very important story to tell about the need for these two bills. When we were on tour with legislators during the interim, we were down in LeGrand, and one of our operators, R.D. Mack, talked to several of the legislators there about a project that was 12 miles outside of LeGrand. He was stationed in LeGrand, and he couldn't get to the project to do the road work because of the condition of the bridges, the weight restriction on those two bridges. The way he was going to have to get to those, to do the job, the way he was going to have to get there was either go through Washington to Pendleton and back up, or back east, back towards LeGrand to get to a project 12 miles outside of LeGrand, or he was going to have to go down to Burns and around. He decided not to bid on the project. I think that's a pretty salient story that indicates the problem we have with the transportation system and our bridge structure in the state. One of the things that I do know came up, and I was actually in another hearing this morning and didn't get to catch some of the questions that came up on the aggregate supply in the state. And I did want to just touch into that just a little bit, because you have a couple of issues going on at the same time. And I know that you folks are interested in where we're at with the aggregate issues from some of the discussion that I heard of this morning. But essentially, it comes down to this. We're headed for a fairly significant crisis in the aggregate industry. We probably have enough supplies on hand now to get us through in some locations, in other locations not. But a great example of the problem is right now we have NOAA fisheries and the salmon issues taking the industry out of the river. We had a case out of Beaver State that all of you had a chance to vote on already and passed the House is on the Senate side that got rid of that stops the conditional use process and calls into question about 75% of the small aggregate sites in the state, whether they can actually provide rock for these jobs. And then the third thing that came out was a Eugene Sand and Gravel case that says that we now have on EFU land a no dust impact, a standard not even the farm community can make. So with all of that being said, one of the big problems that I see is that's going to happen with the state policies on the aggregate supply is two things. One is it's important you folks know that 60% of the cost, 40 to 60% of the cost for highway construction from an ODOT study in Bend indicates it is for the cost of aggregate. It's a substantial part of the cost of building roads. The present policies of this state are restricting the aggregate supply, are reducing competition, which is a huge, huge problem for ODOT, and at the same time, we're about ready to pass a huge bill that increases the demand. And what we're, where we're going to end up with is paying a premium for our aggregates. And I think at some point the legislature is going to have to get their handle on this issue. The second point I wanted to make is there's been a lot of criticism of the state about being a non-business friendly state, and I'm surprised in my industry watching those three examples that I gave you and how they're hurting the industry, that maybe there is something to that, that there is a problem with how we are handling land use and businesses in this state. So with that, I'm open for any other questions. I know that's not a good note on trying to get a highway funding package through, but you got to look at it collectively. You can't just look at throwing new money and then having all these other bad policies land out there that are costing you dollars. And it's got to be handled collectively, and I'm here to answer any questions on that topic.
My first question then, Rich, is do you have enough rock there to take care of these jobs?
I think this is important.
Yeah.
The question, Chair Brown and all our coastal members here, I know we have several of them. With the only aggregate supply that makes, I shouldn't say the only, but the primary aggregate supply that makes the ODOT specifications for road construction comes from the rivers on the coast. As soon as NOAA Fisheries comes out, I just heard today from DSL that we're going to have a bunch of bad news coming out of Reedsport on the Umpqua sand and gravel situation. You are not going to have a supply of material there that meets ODOT spec. Where you're at in Newport, at least you have Morris Brothers railing some in, I believe, into Toledo, or at least they're setting that up. But for the rest of the coastal community, they don't. And so I would question whether there is a supply available on the coast to handle any kind of bridge maintenance or modernization projects. In the valley, there's plenty of aggregate. We'll use up those supplies. In Bend, there's plenty of supply. Matter of fact, the state's aggregate supply, if we head down the direction we're going, we'll probably end up coming from Eastern Oregon. And so the material you'll be getting on the coast will be Eastern Oregon rock.
Thank
That's
you,
good for Representative Gilman.
Any questions? Representative Berger.
Well, Chairman Brown, I think that I just need to comment on the Umpqua situation. It is very serious. One company lost the permit. When the second company came along, couldn't get the permit. This expensive equipment has been sitting on the side there, not doing any work at all. And they will not let them dredge. And now they've brought in another whole series of regulations about fish that was not in the original complaint. And we've been trying to work with NIFS, who is working with them, and they've completely shut them down. This has put people out of work. The Port of Umpqua is extremely concerned about it. And I can tell you a company that said they would not have come to Oregon had they known this kind of thing would happen, and that's American Bridge.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Representative. Any other questions? I don't see any. Thank you, Rich. I didn't pronounce this name.
Moyano.
Could I have Gail Harley and David Moyano? And Marshall. Thank you, gentlemen, for being patient here with us.
Good afternoon, Chair Brown and members. I am Marshall Kova, representing the American Council of Engineering Companies of Oregon. We are here as an enthusiastic supporter of the package and are ready, willing, and able to get the projects underway. With me today are Dave Moyano, he's with David Evans and Associates, and Gail Harley with OBEC from Eugene.
Thank you, Chairman Brown, members of the committee. Once again, for the record, my name is Dave Moyano. I'm a licensed civil engineer and structural engineer in the state of Oregon. I'm also the senior vice president and director of bridge engineering for the Oregon Consulting Engineering Company of David Evans and Associates. I've been practicing bridge engineering here in the state of Oregon for about 19 years, and I'm here today representing the American Council of Engineering Companies of Oregon, more commonly known as ACEC of Oregon. Very briefly, ACEC of Oregon represents 110 member firms in the state, including 3,000 employees throughout the state. ACEC is in full support of House Bill 2041 and House Bill 2367. In our view, these bills are in Oregon's best interest for three primary reasons. One, jobs. Two, commerce. And three, highway safety. From a jobs perspective, numbers you've already heard, nearly 5,000 jobs created at a time when Oregon desperately needs these types of opportunities to be created. From a commerce perspective, our roads and bridges are our superhighway for the future. Good roads and bridges will revitalize our economy in all aspects of our society, from safety, schools, industry, commerce, in all aspects. And third, highway safety. To put it simply, you know, good roads and bridges are safe for the traveling public, and they also help get trucks out of the city corridors back on the highways where they belong. Passage of these bills will have an effect long after construction is completed. And being an engineer, I had to run some numbers this morning on my calculator, and I estimated that over the service life of the bridges built and or repaired under these bills, 250 billion trips will be served. That's a billion with a B. So if you think about a bill that will reach out and touch that number of people, it's hard to, I think, match any bill versus the 2041 and 2367. So that impressed even myself as an engineer, the number of 250 billion trips will be served over the life of these bridges. ACEC applauds your efforts and the efforts of all involved to get the bills to this point today. We also applaud the Oregon Department of Transportation, ODOT, for a number of reasons. Number one, working with ODOT as a consultant here in Oregon for 19 years, I have seen an unprecedented change in project delivery attitude and process and structure over the last 2 to 3 years. We are truly ready to deliver this program, not only in traditional delivery means and methods like design, bid, build, but also alternative project delivery such as design, build. So we're very, very excited as a professional engineering industry to see the focus on project delivery. ODOT has truly primed the pump over the last 2 to 3 years and how they have handled the OTIA 1 and OTIA 2 investments that you have supported and made here in the state. We also applaud ODOT's confidence that they have in our professional industry, and that is underscored by their decision to outsource the program and to highly leverage the private consulting engineering community as well, and their confidence in our ability to deliver timely, quality, and cost-efficient, cost-effective services. We're very excited to be a part of bringing this revitalization opportunity to Oregon. We do have, as a professional industry, the capacity and expertise and enthusiasm to deliver this program in a manner that will exceed your and the taxpayers' expectations. And once again, being an engineer, I ran a quick number, and one full-time engineer working in our member organizations can, in 1 year's time, put $2 million of construction on the street. So if you just do the math, this industry that we represent is very well positioned to provide the capacity to ODOT and the public to deliver this program. So I'd like to thank you for the opportunity for me to be here today to testify. I'd like to ask a fellow colleague of mine to make a few comments, and after which we're more than happy to answer any questions that you might have. Thank you very much.
Thank you. We also support the bill very much. It seems like an excellent way to stimulate not only the economy but the consulting engineering field. We have an excellent university at Oregon State that supplies excellent engineers, and I've been part of a cooperative program with them that you can see the representative students that are coming out into the field. I hate to see those go out of state, but the way we do projects, we involve not only, it's a bridge project, but it involves a number of sub-consultants that get the product out to the bid-build package. You know, we have geotechnical, environmental, traffic, all of the right-of-way issues that come up. So there's a number of firms that, you know, of the 110, there probably are not that many bridge design firms, but the combination of all of those consultants come together to pull a bridge project together, and I think it's an excellent system. We've been preparing, like David has, over the last couple, 3 years with the OTIA packages, we've been preparing for the potential for additional work, and we've been team building, getting ready to strike while when the iron's hot, and going after the job. So we think it's an excellent time. My own experience, I've been in bridge engineering for 25 years. We've seen the program go from being, especially with the local agencies, being funded through timber receipts, and that has fallen off, and then it's gone to federal government assistance, and I think it's a great plan for the state to step in and now take a responsibility for some of the issues that have come up. So we've seen it fall behind, basically, in my 25 years. We haven't been able to keep up with the not just the crack bridges, but other bridge problems, and so I think it's an excellent way an excellent program that that this bill will help.
Thank you, sir. My staff tells me I've got to do some house cleaning and ask that you identify yourself for the record.
Oh, I'm sorry. Gail Harley with Obeck Consulting Engineers.
Thank you, Gail. Any questions?
Sure.
Representative Greenlee.
I put my calculator to work right. The estimate would be we need 1,600 engineers to do put this much on the street, or I assume that's engineer years. We have that kind of capacity to keep this work in Oregon?
Representative Greenblatt, I ran a quick calculation, and if you take the, let's say, $2.5 billion program over a 10-year period, and you come up with a per-year calculation, and then assume that in a one-year time period, one engineer can put $2 million on the street, I think it works out
100 engineers.
About 100 engineers per year. And so the answer to the question is yes, the professional organization of consultant engineers in the state does have the capacity to deliver the program.
Can I follow up on that? We've heard testimony from ODOT on the new kind of process. And you talk specifically about moving design bid build to design build. This is a lot of money going out on the street. Is your testimony that we can feel pretty comfortable that it's going out, it's going to be spent right, it's going to be getting the jobs done in the way we need them done?
Representative Greenlee, from my experience, once again, I've been working here as a consultant with ODOT now for 19 years, and the last 2 to 3 years has been, you know, beyond encouraging. It's to the point of pure excitement to see the emphasis on delivery of projects. If you would have asked me that question maybe 8 years ago, 6 years ago, I probably would give you a different answer. But right now, based upon the changes and the people, change in the philosophies that I have seen firsthand, I do have all the confidence from a professional standpoint that ODOT has the right process, people, structure, attitude, philosophy, and the direction that they're heading in. I have all the confidence as a taxpayer as well as a professional that they can deliver this program. And once again, the decision to outsource and leverage from a public-private partnership with the professional engineering community just underscores that much more confidence that I have, no doubt, to deliver this program from a taxpayer's perspective as well.
If I may follow, sir. It is no doubt, I guess, I'm worried about in the process. I'm worried about, and I have a lot of confidence in your firm. I've used them myself. But we're going to be depending on a very large number of firms with the central control rather modest in ODOT. Is that, I guess it doesn't make you very nervous, but I wonder if it should make me very nervous.
I can only speak from my perspective, and I can't speak for ODOT either, but I am aware that ODOT is continuing to put in place infrastructure to support this type of program. I'm aware of current decisions and current organizations that will add a special section, if you will, to oversee and implement the program, and then also to provide supervision and oversight to the private sector firms that ODOT will leverage. But once again, I can't speak entirely for ODOT, but the things that I'm aware of and the things that I've been observing builds that confidence that, given such a large program, they'll have the infrastructure in place to lead it and be good stewards of the money that will be brought in from these two bills.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Any other questions? Thank you, gentlemen, for your testimony. I appreciate it. Could I have Bob Shiprack and Jeff Carlson, please?
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I'm Bob Shiprack. I'm Secretary of the Oregon Building Trades Council. I represent construction workers throughout the state of Oregon. I'm going to be short this afternoon because you probably heard a lot of things. I'll just give you our perspective of this and hope you go to a work session. This is probably, in fact, not probably, the most significant economic development bill of the session, not only providing jobs, but really needed improvements in commerce and how we do business in this state. Throughout this session, I've testified in a number of committees about the construction economy. In January, I talked about a 15% unemployment rate in the trades. Then it was 25. Then it's 35. Today, it's 40% unemployment in the building trades. 40%. In some parts of the state, it's even worse. We're not in a recession anymore. We're in a depression in construction. And a lot of folks have exhausted their state and federal unemployment benefits. Now they're starting to leave the state looking for work in other parts of the country. I just want to finish by saying that Bruce Warner is going to get a big hit. I promise I wrote this before the hearing, but I also want to appreciate the work that ODOT's done. Their can-do attitude, the open-door policy, the willingness to look at alternative bidding practices and think outside the box, I think is really going to be helpful in this whole process. And the last thing I can say is I just hope, and I've talked to Bruce about this, I hope, assuming passage of this package, that these projects can be put out on the street as quickly as possible because we really need it. I'll stop there. Any questions?
One more, sir. Hi, Bob. Welcome. I saw a recent piece you wrote about a great concern about jobs that were supposed to be in Oregon.
That's true.
Going out of Oregon. Can you feel comfortable that things in here will keep these jobs in Oregon?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Representative Greenlake, the article I wrote a while back in various papers had to do with a private sector job that was not under our state prevailing wage law, which allowed a contractor to bring people in from, in this case, a large number from the deep south. But since this will, in fact, most of this work's not even under state prevailing wage, but under the federal Davis-Bacon Act, that helps ensure Oregon contractors and workers will get the first shot at this work. It's a good law. It works.
Thank you, Bob. Go ahead, Jeff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Jeff Carlson. I represent the International Association of Bridge, Structural, Ornamental, and Reinforcing Iron Workers. We have about 1,200 members, and currently 300 of them are on the out-of-work list. I'm here to support this transportation package. I got three words for everybody involved: hip, hip, hooray. Thank you for bringing this to us. My members are chomping at the bit. Bob mentioned that unemployment benefits and extensions are running out. You can't make it on unemployment. A lot of my members are in California working. My brother's down in San Diego right now. He's been down there most of the winter. not a bad place to winter out. But anyway, he had to go there because there's no work here in Oregon, so he's down there working. I just wanted to come here and support the bill, and hopefully we can get this thing work sessioned out here and put not just iron workers to work, but the rest of the construction trades. Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah. Any other questions?
Thank you.
Don't see any. Thank you, gentlemen.
Got to keep the iron workers more than 30 feet.
Yeah, they're going to be higher than 30 feet now.
Going to have Tim Tim Nesbitt and Ralph Groner, please. And Ralph, please don't sing to us.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Tim Nesbitt, president of the Oregon AFL-CIO, and here in support of House Bill 2041 and House Bill 2367. I think these bills, whether you pursue them in one combined bill or separately, represent a political and economic twofer. Number one, you get short-term economic stimulus and job creation, I think, more than any other bill offers on your docket this session. And number two, we get long-term, a major contribution to our long-term economic development strategy. Without this bill, we're going to be at a competitive disadvantage because of our transportation system. With this bill, we'll regain our competitive advantage and, I think, pave the way for a more sustainable economic recovery. So we're strongly in support of these bills and hope to see them move forward quickly.
Thank you, Dan. Well,
Mr. Chairman, no. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Ralph Groner, representing AFSCME, and just a few thoughts. One, our union, although we represent, what, 23,000, for the most part, public employees, and most of your county and city road crews are my members, for the most part, if they're unionized. I would like to say, first and foremost, that for 2 years I've gone in front of the State Transportation Commission to move jobs that weren't my members' jobs. They were, quite frankly, private sector jobs. So let me say why that's important to me. One, we believe this is a fundamentally sound package, and we support the bills as one package, and we believe they need to move through the process collectively together. We also believe the local projects, and of course we're biased, because we are local government, cities and counties, I am not the state, are that local projects are on the ground quickly, they sustain and provide immediate jobs and economic stimulus. We'd also like to thank you so very much for our top priority package in economic development, even finally thank you, all of you, for getting here. This is the most significant act in over a decade. First dollars for maintenance and preservation in over a decade. Investment will begin to address our 4.7 billion bridge need and $500 million annual backlog of state, county, city, road bridge maintenance and preservation needs. And I'm very happy to say that the people who benefit through AGC contractors hiring the private sector are the iron workers, my dear friends, cement workers, operating engineers, carpenters, and laborers, none of whom are my members, but they do make really decent family wages when they work. In my neighborhood, however, four of my neighbors and best friends are all gone out of state. Several iron workers and are in the trades, and they had to go out of state and couldn't even find work in two or three other states. They go in and fill out the book. So we have troubling times, so this is an important package, which repairs bridges in critical freight routes, provides family wage jobs, provides money for modernization. I like the fact that maybe finally, since we have no gas tax increase, contrary to what I heard this morning, we might have an opportunity to pass a package. We ensure freight movement to keep Oregon's economy moving. And one comment I'd like to make that you're going to get hit probably is on the Transportation Reinvestment Fund is just a thought. We create that fund, if you'll slow down and think about that a minute, with transportation dollars, not general fund dollars. Okay, those are registration fees, DMV fees, they're transportation. No general fund dollar came over and helped create that fund. We then put that fund back into certain things that deal with transportation. some of which significantly increases the economy of this state. And when people are working, of course, that creates jobs, and we're the most dependent state in America on one tax called the income tax. So it's critical that we have this package more than any state in the country. So my only thought is, if somebody says, well, we ought to use our funds to do the same thing, these are different funds. These are not out of the general fund. They're transportation funds that do create funds for the general fund, aside from the limitation in the reinvestment fund. Because what happens if we don't fix our bridges and our highways? As an example, I'll give you where I live in Clackamas County, if you don't mind. Damascus has been chosen of Clackamas County to be about two-thirds of all new growth in the Tri-County area by metro will go in one area. Now, that all sounds wonderful, and industrial as well. One of the problems is the transportation system. So I looked at my county investment, and I saw Clackamas County out of this got, if you didn't get that, you should ask AOC for it, or you have a cities, you should ask for the cities, $1.7 million, and I went, that is wonderful, because in our county we can't possibly bring online the new growth when in fact we're the major contributor to pollution of our highways. Clackamas County exports 72% of its citizens now drive into Washington County and Multnomah County to work because of a lack of industrial land. And that's being rectified, but it has to have a transportation component to do it. If you've ever been through rural Damascus over to Highway 26, you're talking hot on Highway 212. So it's an example of what this will do is create multiple activities in the economy which provides jobs, and those jobs will create dollars that go into the general fund, helping fund schools, health coverage, and all our other programs. And that's why this is so critical. This is an absolutely most important piece of legislation in this session, in our opinion. So we thank you for this very, very much. And we also would like to thank those of you who came and brought your beautiful voices to our sing-along.
Thank you, Ralph. Is there any questions? Thank you, gentlemen. Appreciate your testimony. Could I have Jeannie Staten and Rod Park together?
Ladies first.
Ladies first, okay.
Chairman Brown, members of the committee, I'm Jeannie Staten, and I'm here today to represent the Associated General Contractors in support of House Bill 2041. I'm a demolition contractor from Eugene, and if I had hitchhiked up here with my lowboy driver loaded with a heavy load, it would have taken an hour and 15 minutes more to get here. We would have had to have gone, my shop is in Goshen, just slightly south of Eugene. We would have had to have gone through downtown Eugene to Highway 99, to Junction City, to Harrisburg, back to Interstate 5 to avoid the three bridges in Eugene that now have the load restriction. So we commend Governor Kulongowski and the legislative leaders, including Chair Brown and Vice Chair Breyer, for bringing forward this package that pays for badly needed investments in bridges and highways all over Oregon. We need to replace and repair aging bridges to keep freight lanes open and modernize our highway to accommodate growing traffic volumes that has already been documented in previous testimony. So has the need to stimulate Oregon's flagging economy, especially the hard-hit heavy construction sector. House Bill 2041 is good medicine for these maladies. Others will comment on the specific provisions in House Bill 2041, so let me focus on the issue of project delivery, since highway contractors will play a pivotal role in meeting the ambitious goals and deadlines of this legislation. First, let me assure you that Oregon highway contractors and our employees are up to this task. We have the capacity and skill to get the job done. All we ask is a fair chance to compete for this work. Contractors have met with ODOT Director Bruce Warner and other top agency officials to discuss how best to achieve the objectives embedded in House Bill 2041, while ensuring that Oregonians get the benefit of the jobs that will be created. We support the concept of using one or more program managers who will ensure that bridge work is coordinated to keep freight and traffic moving. Program managers also will look for ways to complete work on bridges as rapidly and efficiently and as safely as possible, while maximizing opportunities for Oregon firms and workers. They won't be directly involved in the actual construction, and we want to emphasize that point. Construction work will be bid in packages that are scaled so Oregon contractors can compete. This ensures robust competition and good value for taxpayers. It also will put more Oregonians to work who can contribute to our state's economic recovery, including additional taxes to pay for essential public services. There are practical reasons for this approach. With the financial stress of the current economy, many highway contractors, even very large ones, have trouble securing the bonding necessary for very large projects. The projects that will be funded through this package will double ODOT's workload and represent a tremendous opportunity to leverage the growth and sophistication of Oregon-based highway contractors, especially as public owners increasingly rely on non-traditional bidding techniques instead of the lowest bid. As these bridge and highway projects provide a potential legacy for Oregon, so they also provide an instrument to grow and expand an Oregon industry that offers solid family wage jobs. Let me make one other point about House Bill 2041. We have some uneasiness about the level of bonding against existing financial resources dedicated to bridge work. Committing almost half of our existing resources limits our ability to address other bridge-related challenges and emergencies. We encourage steps to lower the use of existing resources to pay for debt service within the confines of the broad agreement that led to the compromise on this measure. AGC supports fee increases and revenue allocations to cities and counties provided for in both House Bill 2041 and 2367. We also support language in the package indicating these local resources are intended to repair bridges and roads, where possible, using private sector contractors and their workforces, not to buy more heavy equipment. AGC agrees with avoiding any provisions to divert highway trust funds. AGC and other stakeholders have worked hard to build a strong case with the public that significant investment is necessary to maintain and improve our transportation system. Siphoning money from a highway trust fund for other purposes, no matter how worthy, sends a conflicting and potentially damaging message to Oregonians. Thank you for this opportunity to speak, and if there are any questions, I'd be glad to answer them.
Any questions? Jessica?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Jessica Harris, here today on behalf of the Associated General Contractors. We'd like to make just a couple additional points. First of all, we extend great thanks to the members of this committee, Senator Starr, and representatives of ODOT and the Governor's Office for continuing conversations on this package. We appreciate the commitment by ODOT to continue to have conversations with AGC throughout the process of delivering these projects, to continue conversations with our contractors about the best way to deliver these projects, and conversations with the program manager to ensure that Oregon contractors continue to have an opportunity to compete for these projects. Further, we look forward to continuing to work with individuals on fixing some of the language and addressing some of the language surrounding the public contracting provisions of this bill. We look forward to finding a resolution to some of the language issues that are there. Finally, we very much appreciate the work of everyone involved behind the scenes and now in front of this committee to make this bill happen. We believe it's one of the most important things that this legislature will do, and we appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you, Jessica. Any questions? I don't see any. Go ahead with Rod, then, please.
Okay. Thank you, Chair Brown. Good to see you again. Thank you for this opportunity for you and the committee. My name is Metro Councilor Rod Park, representing the Metro Council. And also, I guess I'll take a note out of Representative Backman's book and note that in my district also happens to be Karen Menace's district. So I'll use a little play.
It doesn't hurt.
Out of his book. Also, if it doesn't hurt, then I also have Senator Metzger, too. So I'll go for two for one. Metro represents over half of the state's population, and the region plays an important role in the state's economy via the port and the industry. I also chair the Joint Policy Advisory Committee on Transportation, which is comprised of local governments, transportation providers, the Port of Portland, and ODOT. In the metro region, we have a growing transportation problem. We have over $7 billion in unfunded needs over the next 20 years, which include both road and transit. The bill has been hard to get a hold of, but here are some basic points I would like to make on behalf of the council. We need a balanced transportation package. The metro area is nationally and internationally known for light rail, but this isn't enough. We need a balance of roads and alternate transportation projects. The region currently raises approximately $8.1 million in gas tax raised by the counties and expends approximately $334 million on road projects at this time. Recently, Metro asked business to become involved and provide us with advice on the package as part of a transportation investment task force, and that was chaired by Jay Waldron from the Port of Portland. Business has echoed the council's desire for a package that includes road improvements and modernization, pedestrian and boulevard improvements, and alternate transportation options. The task force identified six major highway corridors that we believe are consistent with what the state has identified. We need this to keep our businesses moving and provide the economic stimulus for the region and the state. Metro recently has moved in approximately 18,638 acres within the urban growth boundary, of which 2,700 acres is for industrial purposes, with approximately another 2,700 for yet to be identified for additional movement coming in year 04. So we desire to be a partner with you and ensure that the state's transportation network is improved. We know that Metro must balance between the region's needs, the aspiration of our local partners. It is an interdependent system, from the wheat growers in Umatilla County to the lumber mills to Roseburg and to the work that goes through the Port of Portland. We do have one concern that's been brought up, and that is in Section 33, Sub 2, dealing with freight. We're not sure what the intent is. We would like to work with the committee to better understand. We have certain areas that, due to the location of the Port of Portland and other areas, that have a mixture of uses, so we're not sure exactly what a reduction in freight capability may exactly mean to the livability of some of those areas. And also, there are some state highways designated within the Portland metro region that perhaps cannot be state highways that may change the effect of this also. So with that, I'd like to thank you, and if you have any questions, be willing to take those.
Thank you. Any questions? Seeing none. Thank you, folks, for your testimony.
Thank you.
I would invite Treasury Secretary Randall Edwards. Thank you for coming.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, my name is Randall Edwards, State Treasurer of Oregon, and I appreciate the opportunity to talk to you about the package of bills in general, and specifically I want to focus on House Bill 2041 and the Dash 6 amendments. I want to congratulate all of those who were involved in putting these bills together. I know this has been a long process, and I'm sure patience is worn thin in some ways, but I think the beginning of a discussion about what the transportation package of the state needs to look like, you're starting that, and that's important. And I'm sure others have spoke about the need. This is something that Oregon desperately needs, both in terms of helping a short-term challenge we have with an infrastructure that needs upgrading, modernizing, improving, expanding, as well as in the context of a recession, of looking at how we can put people to work at a time of need. The idea behind the financing of this, and that's really what I wanted to underscore here, of using bonds to help finance this after you've raised fees to leverage those fees, and using bonds is, in my mind, a very appropriate tool and a prudent tool to meet this infrastructure need of the state. And bonds, in this case, in my mind, have long been something that the state has been a little behind the curve in using in transportation infrastructure needs in this state. And I want to credit the chair today, the new chair, as well as the board, in really being more aggressive in using this financial tool. And the reason why I think using bonds is an appropriate tool, and by the way, other states have moved away from being more cash basis to using bond financing to help meet their needs in this area, in part because there can be a very good match between using this tool, that is, if you're looking at building a bridge, expanding a road, the life of those assets can match very closely to the bond issuance that you put out, in which case you're sharing the cost of that project not on just one taxpayer but on a multiple taxpayer, that is, over time. So I think that the use of this, and of course the delicate part is balancing, you've got to pay off those bonds, balancing the cash needs of paying these bonds versus cash needs within the transportation department. But again, I think the tool is one that can be very powerful, and in fact our experience to date has shown very well received in the marketplace. Not only did the last legislative body pass a $400 million, and then that was because of interest rates up to $500 million infrastructure package. The session before, we sold the first bonds for the state of Oregon, which were a little over $50 million, and it was very well received in the marketplace. So as far as the credit and the ability to sell these bonds, I think is one that I want to come in and say this should be something we can do very well for you and for the state, and the market will be well received. You might say, well, didn't we get a downgrade in our rating? And yes, we did. The state's bond rating, though, would not, and the change in that bond rating would not affect the bond rating on these bonds. These are revenue bonds. They're funded, as I described, as you know, by the fees that you're raising. And so it's an independent bond rating that will, in my mind, and I believe you will receive a very good rating as we've seen in the past. So I want to clarify that the downgrade that we received was on our general obligation bonds, which in this case were not revenue bonds. This is a separate category of a bond. So we should see a good interest rate in the marketplace. Now, again, this isn't going to happen overnight, and putting out the size of a package will take years, but the point is the market is receptive, interest rates are great, and the policy behind this is very, very good. So again, I want to really commend you and appreciate where you're sitting and the idea of using this. I just want to raise one policy question to you, and that is in the Dash 6 amendments on House Bill 2041. I think this was actually highlighted a little earlier, and that has to do with capturing of income taxes in Section 20 and 21. I'm a little troubled about the means of funding outlined in those sections, which would sequester income tax revenues for specified purposes. And as you know, because the Oregon General Fund relies heavily on income taxes, our revenue system really suffers a lot, as we're finding out now, from a lot of volatility. And so one of the mitigating factors, particularly from Wall Street, is they look at financial flexibility of the state, and that is not trying to wall off uses of money as this section of the bill would do. I can't say for sure that this would be something that would impact our rating in and of itself, but it is a trend that we're seeing more and more in this building this session, more of trying to wall off income for a specific use. And I just want to raise a flag that if you keep going down that path, cumulatively, that could create a problem for us. And I just want to highlight that the sequestration, again, there may be good intent behind that, but it's a trend that would have a potential problem for us over time if we continue down that path. We need the financial flexibility. You need the financial flexibility. And that's one aspect that the credit rating agencies look at our state and all states. It's not unique. But the fact is, this is a trend that does raise a concern to me, and I just wanted to air that with you. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions, and thanks for the time.
Thank you, Mr. Secretary. Earlier in the day, we had a committee member raise the question regarding bonding, and I have to say you did a far better job of explaining that than what I did. I think I probably confused them a great deal more than I answered their question. Is there any other question, Representative Greenland?
And that's why we elect a treasurer. Good afternoon, Treasurer Edwards. I must say I really do agree with you on that. That's on that section 21 and 22, and also on section 23. I mean, those are all policy issues that are raised. It seems to me in the wrong place here when we're just trying to get bonds together. I wonder if you could just talk a little bit more about how that trend to reduce the flexibility over time does affect the general obligation bonds of the state, which you pointed out is decreasing. I think it would be very useful if you could just give us a little bit more on that.
Sure. And thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Greenlick, I first want to say, and again, I'm not the sequestration and the uses of those monies. That's not the issue, and I think the fundamental question is that should you sequester for a specific purpose, and again, based on certain assumptions that you're going to have these incomes. When rating agencies look at states, they look at a multiple of factors, how many bonds you have outstanding, the flexibility in managing the selling of those bonds. Oregon's done a very good job as a result in the mid-80s, as a result of a problem we had with the Veterans Home Loan Program, where all bond sales now run through my office, so you don't have agencies running to the market at untimed times and therefore maybe even at cross purposes. So we're seeing strong in that area. The fact our budget process, despite the challenges you're facing, is seen as a positive. It's a very open process. You regularly recalibrate what you think your revenues are going to be in your budget, and we get high marks for that. Of course, one of the big concerns has been our income tax system being unique in that there's very few states that have just a one-legged stool in that sense. And then the kicker being another challenge where they would say, and in fact, one of the rating agencies highlighted that as an inflexibility in managing your money in the good times. So another discussion, another point, but the flexibility of how you manage your general fund is something they see as a strong point. And if you start moving down the path of sequestering, that is, and anticipating income where you're now walling it off and you have less discretion, I think that that will be seen as a negative by them. I can't predict that. I don't want to overstate that somehow is going to relate into some other downgrade or some other action by them, but it is a trend that they, and they've talked to us about those trends, and it's not only in Oregon that's being done, but that's not a positive trend.
Thank you. Any other questions? It looks like that's it. Thank you, Secretary.
Well, thank you very much for your time. And good luck on getting this bill done.
All right.
Or the bills. Thank you.
Could I have Lynn Lundquist, Doug Riggs, and John Watt, please? Thank you, gentlemen, for being sufficient.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for allowing us to come in and testify today. Obviously, it's a great deal of pleasure with which we do that. I represent, I'm Lynn Lundquist of the Oregon Business Association. Congratulate all the members of the panel. Obviously, some of you have been steeped in this day and night for a long period of time. OBA supports this because it's so critical to the business of our state. Whether we're talking about one of our members from Fort Rock that produces cattle and hay and moves it across the state, or whether we're talking about an employer in the metro area that employs maybe one of the largest employers of the state, they all need a good transportation system, new people and product, and that's why we support this. We recently, as OBA, announced a call to action declaration of standards in regard to how we fund our state budget. And I only mention that because I compliment Director Warner when he came and spoke to our OBA membership a long time ago in promoting transportation for this particular biennium. And his thrust was on the fact not of that, how can we raise the money? His thrust was, what are the standards in our infrastructure that we must have as Oregonians? And I think you started from that base, and I compliment you for doing that, and certainly Director Warner for taking that approach rather than just saying, we need money, and this is what we're going to do with it. So I think it's a very appropriate position to take. I'll just close by saying, and try to make this very brief, that you know, when you come and testify before a committee, you should always try to understand the ones you're testifying to as well as possible. And I will say that as I look at the committee today, it is obvious to me that there are three of the members that are much more perceptive than the rest of you. And I'll just, give that foundation based upon the fact that they were astute enough to run for office when the stars of cracked bridges, low interest rates, and high employment were all lined up and can participate in success, because my gentleman on my right and myself and many others that serve with you, including those of you who are not in your first term, have the scars to prove what it's like to try to find a transportation package through these halls. Congratulations. We certainly support the bill.
Thank you, Lynn. John?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. John Watt, I was a little concerned when he said scars and looked over at me. I represent a group of businesses and from Southern Oregon, and including Jackson County. And I will tell you, this has been a long, long road to where we've got today. You're all to be commended. It's been done over and over again. We want you to have the ability to get through the door with your head tonight, so I'm not going to individually compliment everybody. I think you're all to be complimented for, first of all, being willing to serve. The transportation issue, as we've addressed in Oregon over the last decade, has been a real challenge. To get to where you are today is a real, real compliment. I will tell you that in Southern Oregon, the folks that I represent and other people are not only interested in transportation, but committed to try to work on transportation in Southern Oregon, and I think we've done a lot of good things. And it's certainly good to see what happened last session, to see what's going on this session, and I must tell you, Mr. Chair, I'm very pleased to see your leadership in being able to get this transportation package into one bill. I think that will be very, very helpful. I would only refer to my testimony's last sentence as I close and urge you to promptly approve this act. Thank you very much.
Thank you, John. Doug?
Mr. Chairman, for the record, Doug Riggs on behalf of the Central Oregon Cities Organization. My organization includes Bend, Redmond, Madras, Sisters, Metolis, and Culver, a number of very small communities in eastern Oregon. But in spite of the fact that we have very few bridges along our I-97 or Highway 97 route, we will be significantly impacted by the bridge funding crisis that we have in this state. For those of you who have taken a look at the map, what you'll notice is that the first series of bridges to be fixed will be along the Highway 97 corridor, and that's because Highway 97 will become the major reroute as they're redoing bridges on Interstate 84 and Interstate 5. And so if you've been through Redmond in bumper-to-bumper summer traffic or through Madras and you've seen the tremendous impact on city streets at this point, look 5, 6, 7 years down the road, and at the height of this construction process, it's going to be even worse. The good thing, and we compliment the committee and the people who worked on this, is that the people who have crafted the bill recognize that, and they've included the opportunity for funding to repair damage that's done to the roads as a result of the increase in traffic, and so we very much appreciate that. In summary, good bill should pass, and I commend all the hard work that all of you put into it. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? Thank you, gentlemen. Appreciate it. Jacob Bostock? Oh, there he is, right there in the middle. I'm looking past him. And how do you pronounce that name?
Catherine
Cherlow. And we got Matt Blevins, too. Thank you, folks, for being so patient with us. It's been a long day.
I bet it has. Shall I go first? Well,
certainly. Go right ahead.
Prepared. Chairman Brown, members of the committee, thank you very much for the opportunity to testify today. I am Catherine Charlo. I'm the executive director of the Bicycle Transportation Alliance. We're a statewide nonprofit working to promote and improve bicycling conditions in Oregon. And we are here to really commend the authors of the bill on the work that's been done. We're pleased to support the bill largely. We have a couple of significant concerns. Foremost among those are with Section 33 of the Dash 6 Amendments, which Councilor Rod Park mentioned earlier in his testimony. That would prohibit the Oregon Transportation Commission from reducing freight capacity on state freight routes. And I will, except for safety and access concerns, and I'll say right off, the BTA recognizes the great importance of freight in this state, and we strongly support policies that enable freight to move freely. In fact, often we found that the interests of freight and bicyclists are very aligned, especially in crowded suburban and urban areas where commuter traffic is tangling things up. But in this particular case, we're quite concerned about the application of this section. In fact, I think the application for bicycle lanes specifically is going to be very small. Bicycle lanes aren't usually put onto state highways that are freight routes for all kinds of reasons. But a similar but related concern is the issue of how cities are going to deal with the kinds of improvements that they may want to institute that look at livability and economic vitality and business revitalization concerns, sort of the downtown Main Streets programs. And it's those that we're really concerned about. We're looking at a city like Sandy or cities like Bend, Madras, and Redmond that sit on Highway 97. This particular provision would really limit the city's abilities to weigh in on the towns that serve their on the roads that serve their towns and go through the center of their towns, and that's of great concern to us as we represent bicyclists statewide, because we also have significant concerns with livability and access and community development. So we'd hate to see that happen, and we really encourage you to take another look at that. We're interested in working with whoever members of this committee and other committees who might be willing to take a look at that provision and come up with something that's less broad, still serves the important interests that freight has in Oregon, and will also not have such potential both intended and unintended consequences that would be bad for Oregon. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Catherine. Any questions? Let's see. Jason, would you?
Thank you, Chair Brown, members of the committee. I'm Jacob Rostoff. I'm the transportation advocate with 1,000 Friends of Oregon. I want to speak briefly and summarize the written testimony I've handed in, talk a little bit about the amendment that we distributed to you all just now, and then talk about a couple other key issues. First of all, 1,000 Friends is very supportive of the hard work that's been done on this bill. There are a lot of great parts of this bill, and we think that this bill has a potential to continue the good traditions that were started in the Oregon Transportation Investment Act of 2001, namely fiscal accountability, stretching the taxpayers' scarce dollars as far as possible, and delivering the kinds of transportation projects that improve Oregon's communities and economy. And I want to talk a little bit about the amendment we handed out, which we think would significantly improve the Dash 6 amendments to the bill. So our amendment is the Dash 5, and it amends the bill as amended in the Dash 6s, so a little confusing, but that's what we're proposing. Our amendments essentially memorialize in statute the work that the Oregon Transportation Commission has done in the last 2 years to describe which kinds of projects are eligible for funding with state transportation dollars. So essentially the OTC has asked the question, well, of the universe of projects that are out there that have sponsors who would like them funded, which projects are most worthy of funding? And the way they've answered that question is by saying, well, it's projects that have done their homework, that are ready to be built, that have resolved their environmental and land use issues, and that deliver the most bang for the buck for Oregonians. We think that's great progress. We salute the Commission's efforts to remain fiscally accountable to the taxpayer, to deliver the most bang for the buck, and to do the right thing by the environment. And so we're proposing to memorialize the work they've done in statute. That's what our amendment attempts to accomplish. I want to also talk about a couple of concerns that we've got about the Dash 6 amendments, so the bill as it's being talked about today. In Section 10, there's a set-aside of $100 million for modernization projects that are to be recommended by the Freight Advisory Committee. And we certainly support prioritizing transportation projects that will help create shovel-ready industrial sites. We understand that's the state's economic development strategy for attracting industrial development. We think that's smart and prudent, but we're concerned that the language in the bill is overly broad. The language in the bill talks about creating access to sites that can produce jobs, and arguably any road is going to create additional access to sites that can produce jobs. So we think that maybe tightening the language up to reflect the work that's been done in Senate Bill 467 and generally the tenor of the conversation in the Capitol about creating shovel-ready industrial sites might help make sure that those dollars go in a more targeted fashion where they're most needed, and will have the most job-producing ability over the long run. In Section 20, the bill talks about the sequestration of income tax generated by the additional economic activity created from spending the revenues created in the bill. And for spending it on elderly and disabled transit projects that increase the efficiency of highways, and a diesel truck engine replacement tax credit. Now, we strongly support funding programs such as, for example, elderly and disabled transit, and also programs that improve the state's highways the efficiency of the state's highways. And in general, programs like elderly and disabled transit are funded only by the income tax. So they're not eligible for funding through the gas tax. Projects that increase the efficiency of the state's highways can be funded through the gas tax. So we encourage the committee to consider moving the funding for the $1 million set aside in the bill for highway efficiency projects back to a funding stream from the gas tax, which is not declining as precipitously as the income tax and is not as adversely dependent on the economy as the income tax. And we do not support the tax credit proposal in the bill for a number of reasons, one of which is that that's essentially taking money from the general fund part of ODOT's budget. That is a very small part of ODOT's budget that funds passenger rail in Oregon, public transportation all across the state in urban and rural communities, and really important programs like elderly and disabled transit, medical transit. We feel strongly that that money belongs in the general fund where it can help support programs like passenger rail and public transportation. And at a time when the general fund is shrinking, we don't support creating an untested new program such as the diesel engine tax credit. Finally, Section 33 that my colleague Catherine talked about, that you heard Councillor Rod Park talk about, and others, we strongly oppose Section 33 as it's currently drafted. It undermines the OTC's ability to manage the state's transportation system capacity, and arguably that's the most important function that the OTC serves. They're the stewards of our public investment, and the public has made a significant investment, billions of dollars, in the state's transportation system, and the OTC's job is to make sure that investment is carefully protected, managed, and grown. It makes a lot of sense in some cases to reallocate capacity from one form of transportation to another, or from one part of the system to another. And in general, it's always the case that the overall state system is expanding in capacity. The state system is constantly expanding. There are new roads being built all the time. So talking about preventing the commission from reducing capacity in one part of the system flies in the face of good management practices generally, of good stewardship of the taxpayer dollar, and of the kinds of community building that have been extremely successful and popular all throughout Oregon, in main streets that are also state highways and communities all across the state on Highway 101, Highway 99, Highway 97, Highway 26. And countless state highways are also the main streets of our communities, and it's extremely important that the OTC and local governments continue to be able to partner to create successful environments for people to live in and for businesses to thrive. In many of those communities, freight is not the most important economic engine. In places like Sisters, in places like Sandy, freight is important, but there's also an important tourist component to their economy. Mm-hmm. And in order to have that tourism flourish and continue, there needs to be a pleasant place to walk and purchase things. So there are other values here that are also important. We certainly support a policy and an investment that will help continue to support freight in the state, that will support the parts of the economy that depend on freight, but not at the cost of the livability of our communities and not at the cost of other parts of the economy. That's the sum of our comments. I wanted to thank the committee for hearing our testimony. I know it's been a long day for y'all, and you probably heard plenty of testimony today for one day, but thank you, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Jacob. You know, you're opposing, you would oppose the tax credit then for the sequestration of the income tax dollars for senior and disabled transportation.
I'm sorry. To be clear, Chair Brown, members of the committee, we don't oppose the sequestration of the income tax dollars. We support the sequestration to support programs like elderly and disabled transit that are currently dependent on that. We oppose it for programs that could be funded through the gas tax and title and registration fees, such as the highway efficiency projects anticipated in the bill, as well as new programs like the diesel truck engine tax credit. So our general position is we need to save those scarce dollars for programs that are dependent on those dollars, such as elderly and disabled transit.
Thank you.
Sorry, any other questions, Chair Brown?
Any questions? Matt?
Chair Brown, members of the committee, for the record, Matt Blevins, Legislative Affairs Director at the Oregon Environmental Council. Thanks for the opportunity to testify. OEC does support this increasing registration fees to fund maintenance, preservation, and safe and efficient operation of Oregon's roads and bridges. We applaud the committee for working so hard to get us to this point. We're also pleased to see that this legislation will equalize the registration fees applied to conventional passenger vehicles and to hybrid gas, electric, and electric vehicles. This was something that we were concerned that came out of last session that was unfair, and we're glad to see the committee has addressed this issue in this bill. We do have large concerns, however, about two sections of the bill, and again, I won't go into depth on them, but they're basically what have been highlighted before. We're concerned about the engine tax credit established in Section 22 that would reward truck owners for purchasing engines that will meet, not exceed, the federal requirements for clean engines that come into effect for the 2004 model year. In other words, basically this sets up a tax credit for the state to subsidize the purchase of engines that will be standards on the market shortly. Secondly, the bill does not require that the engines that are replaced be taken out of service, and therefore the tax credit will not necessarily help turn over the truck fleet to cleaner engines, since engines can last over 1 million miles. So we have a real concern that people may have an incentive to use a tax credit to purchase these new engines, and then they'll sell their old engines and their old trucks to be continually used on the road and not help to reduce air pollution here in the state. Thirdly, the Environmental Protection Agency estimates that the requirements on engine manufacturers to produce cleaner engines will cost truck purchasers an average of just under $400 per vehicle purchased, much less than the tax credits that are allowed under this section. Finally, oxides of nitrogen, which is what this is really trying to target, are not a pressing air quality problem in Oregon. The current Department of Environmental Quality initiative to reduce particulate matter from diesel engines will do much more to protect human health. Again, we'd remind the committee that particulate air pollution from diesel engines is the biggest concern we're seeing here in Oregon. If the state wants to help clean up diesel pollution, there are much better ways to spend general fund dollars. In short, the truck engine tax credit will subsidize business purchases that would happen with or without the tax credit. It will not lead to cleaner air. A much more appropriate use of the Transportation Reinvestment Fund would be to increase the percentage of funding for senior and disabled transportation services and to fund the Oregon portion of the Amtrak Cascades, which currently is in jeopardy in the current budget situation. We also are strongly opposed to Section 33, which, again, as the two previous testifiers have talked about, would limit the OTC's ability to reduce the vehicle carrying capacity on identified freight routes. I think we would echo what their concerns were on this and the impact it can have on communities and livability. So we'd encourage the committee to relook at those issues and change those. And would support 1,000 Friends amendments regarding project selection criteria. So with that, I'll take any questions.
Thank you, Matt. Any questions? Don't see any. Thank you. Let's see. We work our way down to the bottom. This year. Is there anyone else that wanted to testify? Susan does.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Committee. I apologize for not signing up. I've been waiting for paper to be delivered to me. I will have a letter for you from Commissioner Francis Skye on behalf of the City of Portland supporting three bills that make up this package, House Bill 2041, 2367, and 2388. The city recognizes that the repair of bridges in the state is essential to the continuing healthy commerce of the state and also an essential element of the economic recovery of the state, and support the passage of these bills. In the letter, however, Commissioner Francisconi will raise a concern with you that you've heard a lot about, I think, already this afternoon about Section 33, and we would like to and will in the next few hours make an effort to talk with folks who are concerned about freight routes. We understand that concern and the nature of it, but we are concerned as well about unintended consequences for transit improvements or economic development projects, and so we'll try to find some language that accommodates what they are trying to accomplish here and still doesn't affect those sorts of things, and we'll, if we can find that, propose that to you by tomorrow morning.
Thank you. Any questions? Okay, thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else? Committee, we got three pages of people that testified today, and there was not one that said that they were against any of these measures. And maybe all the no votes stayed away, but that's really rewarding. With that, I think that we completed the hearings today after approximately, four and a half hours of hearings.
I had a question, and I know you having been in on the conversations on wedge dollars, and I know I'd written a note to someone, and I hopefully they have some idea about whether there are wedge dollars in this or where they go.
Bruce, can you answer those questions for me?
Mr. Chairman, representing Beyer. For the record, I'm Bruce Warner, the director of the Oregon Department of Transportation. If I understand your question properly, first off, wedge money, so people understand what we're talking about there. We're talking about money that would be available for use for operations maintenance purposes, that would be in the future committed to bond repayments, but until you sell all of the bonds, you don't need those dollars. For all of those dollars for bond repayments that we've estimated here. So the question is there any wedge money available? And first off, you look at the monies are split so that, again, the state receives a certain portion of the revenues and local governments receive a certain portion of the revenues. So on our side, there is money that you could call wedge for the state. The issue is we're going to be probably because of the amount, the things you've heard about in terms of bonding, much of our existing revenues will be essentially making sure that we have those in reserve. So there isn't really any to speak of wedge for the state to do operations and maintenance, as Senator Starr put to you earlier. On the city and county side, there would be some wedge, again, on the $300 million piece, and they would be probably able to move those towards operation and maintenance until such time as the full $300 million is sold, and then we'd be looking at using all of the money that was there for bond repayments. Obviously, they need to have some decisions about how much they want to bond ultimately, but there is some wedge money there for both. Just on the state side, we're going to make sure that we have it as a reserve to cover our bond payments in future years and don't have to go into get more deeply into existing programs. So the question is, have I answered your question?
Yes, you have. Thank you.
Thank you, Bruce. Thank you.
Here, I got kind of one, Bruce. It's a kind of a shot in the dark. I see in our... Well, this thing bothered me, you know, the amount of money owed the state, and I see that $17,680 is owed from 23,000 clients to the Department of ODOT, to the Transportation Department. Where were those? Who would owe that? Why don't we collect that money?
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Bonner, I don't know what you have in front of you right there. I think it's up in the state treasurer gave you the...
liquidated and delinquent accounts receivable as of June 20.
I would have to. Yeah, I would have to look at that representative. And, but I tell you, there are a number of folks who do owe us money. We do collect as much as we can. Some of that we do have to write off. But I'll be glad to look at those and give you the breakdown of where those are coming from.
I'm sure that not all of that. It would be this, but I know from my experience in the past, whenever you have damage to a vehicle accident to a highway structure, you get, quite often you'll get the bill, and not always is it collectible. You have to
obviously
you had to find the culprit and then make sure they got something to pay you with.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, if that's a big portion of it, I actually suspect that probably is. We have an internal audit which I'll share with you that shows our recovery of damages. I think we're doing quite well when we know who hit the public facility. So I think some of that probably is included now. But let me get back to you with some answers on that.
Thanks, Bruce. Thank you, Bruce. I don't know about the rest of the committee, but I'm ready to call it a day. And with that, we will adjourn.